Hi everyone, this is Prashant Shukla from Origin Ventures. Welcome to another episode of the Origin Ventures podcast. Today, I'll be interviewing Justin Ehrlich, the VP of Strategy, Policy, and Legal at Voyage, an autonomous vehicle company based in the Bay Area. In the past, Justin spent time at Uber as the head of policy, autonomous vehicles, and urban aviation, as well as the California Department of Justice as a special assistant attorney general, and McKinsey as an engagement manager. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Okay. Good morning, Justin.
Hey, how's it going?
Going well. Thanks again for doing this. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Excited to be here.
Awesome. So, you know, you're at Voyage now, and you've had a pretty interesting journey to get there. You spent some time at Uber, McKinsey, California Department of Justice, and I'm sure many other small things along the way. You know, I'd be curious to know how you went from one to the other and kind of what your calculus was for each decision, and then maybe color that a little bit with how your goals changed along the way in your career.
Sure. It was sort of it looks like a few disparate or different jobs. And then on another, in my mind, it also feels like it followed some natural evolution. So after law school, I wanted to do time in the business world to sort of blend the world of policy and business, which I feel often doesn't converse enough, or they talk past each other. So I ended up, after clerking for a year, I joined McKinsey in the New York office and started doing a lot of work in the public sector around sustainability. And in that work, working with cities on long-term strategy plans about reducing carbon emissions, I actually ended up getting pretty interested in urban mobility as a key transportation sector that there was a real opportunity to improve from an emissions perspective, as well as just from a customer service level perspective. I then actually, after a year, took a leave of absence to go work on the California Attorney General's transition team, Kamala Harris, where I was doing some white papers around topics including technology, and then went back to McKinsey. But then after a few more years, she asked me to come join her policy team to be her principal advisor on technology. And that sort of seemed like a topic or an opportunity that I couldn't pass up. So I moved from New York to California to take that role, where I was working a fair amount with tech companies, as well as internally to the California Department of Justice, sort of leading technology strategy and policy. And in that role, I ended up actually also getting involved more deeply on the regulation of new technologies, including autonomous vehicles. And after she was elected to the Senate, and I started thinking about what I wanted to do next, the overlap of urban mobility and technology regulation sort of led me to this natural place around autonomous vehicles as the intersection of both. And then I found this great opportunity at Uber to be their head of policy for both autonomous vehicles and flying cars, as it is colloquially known. And you know, basically, I think there is so much exciting opportunity in the transportation space, and so much of it will be premised on leveraging new technologies, that this intersection of technology and regulation just was immensely appealing. So I jumped into that. And then, as you mentioned, most recently, I just switched over to Voyage, which was premised on a couple things, which was really excited to move to a true startup environment, early stage Series A, and really help shape a company grow. And yeah, Love the idea of a smart, sharp team just before its hockey stick growth period, also attacking the market in a really smart way where it's trying to first deploy in senior communities where the operational domain is a little bit easier to manage, and also you're serving customers who need mobility technology most. So that sort of completed the journey that sort of each step sort of led into another.
That makes sense. Talk a little bit about what you do at Voyage now and maybe how that's different than what you were doing at Uber or how it's similar.
Yeah, so part of the excitement about going to a smaller startup is you get to wear more hats. So at Uber, I was the head of policy, and that had me involved working with government regulators at the federal level, at the local level, engaging with our local policy teams. And Uber has a strong, big network on its regional policy team, where I was in policy at headquarters. At Voyage, I'll end up being basically a one-man policy shop. Yes. And so it's, you know, fun to get to do more varied tasks in that realm. But also, it in my role as head of strategy, policy, and legal, I also get to tap into some of my previous background. So I'll be helping develop and lead a lot of our go-to-market strategy, leveraging a lot of the work and experience I developed at McKinsey, as well as helping to oversee and lead our legal work and our legal team, leveraging my legal background and my time as a legal advisor at the California Department of Justice. So it's fun to be doing a mix of those things, and you really can only get that opportunity at a smaller startup.
Yes, makes sense. What do you view as the biggest challenges facing you in the short term at Voyage? I mean, obviously, it's a newer company. It's smaller, much smaller than Uber. So you'll be wearing lots of different hats. You'll be tackling problems left and right that maybe weren't part of your domain at Uber or some of the larger companies that you worked in the past.
Yeah, so I think there are certainly no shortage of challenges and exciting things to tackle. You know, I think one is, with the smaller company, you know, you're still being a little bit more scrappy. And so you really have to figure out what are the things you need to prioritize, you know, immediately versus a little bit down the road. So I think figuring out that prioritization will be important. But I think it'll be starting to be things first around, you know, helping to make sure that we build a name and a brand that customers can trust. So we'll be investing a lot of time in our first pilot sites. We're two pilot sites in retirement communities, the Villages in Florida, just outside Orlando, which is actually almost 150,000 person community, and then the Villages in San Jose. But we'll be over investing in outreach and community engagement to make sure that community members really understand what we're about, how we approach safety, what we see the benefits are of this autonomous vehicle and self-driving technology. So I think that'll be the most important among many, is to really just earn the trust in the communities. And then I think we'll be looking to scale and grow. And, you know, as every company who scales pretty fast knows, doing that carefully and is can often be a challenge. I think our CEO has building a really great culture, and so how do we continue to keep that culture as we get bigger, I think will be an important managerial challenge. And then I think also just navigating the general policy waters as there becomes more focus and maturity in the AV market. We've got the federal AV bill still being pushed. We've got states and local localities each also having strong thoughts about regulating self-driving. And so I think navigating the three levels of government to make sure that we come up with regulatory solutions that can scale effectively will also be a big topic I'll be tackling.
Yeah. Can you talk a little how you're going to plug into the policy process? Like, how much do you want to lean in versus kind of let it play out? You know, I'm sure other AV companies, all the way from the platform companies to the actual network companies to the people like Uber and Lyft, how involved are they and how involved do you want to be? And, you know, a lot of people may not know kind of the ins and outs of how this process can work and how long it can take. So any granular details you can share, I think would be helpful.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there's certainly been a lot of interaction between some of the bigger companies, Waymo, Uber, Cruise, Lyft, and some of the government players. You know, I think Voyage has a distinct approach, which will be first focusing in these closed communities. And so I think for us, the focus will shift a little bit towards engaging with these communities and the people who oversee them directly as sort of our first point of focus. But we'll certainly also be engaging with the federal government, with NHTSA. We're engaging with the Florida legislature. And so we'll be having those conversations too to make sure that we've got a seat at the table. You know, I think in general, where I see things going are the federal government, the USDOT is taking a sort of voluntary guidelines approach for now, which I think can be pretty helpful as the technology develops. Certain states are mm-hmm. taking more proactive approaches or more heavy-handed approaches. Others are taking lighter, laissez-faire approaches. So we're seeing a pretty wide range in terms of states and how they're getting involved. I think we as a company will choose to engage in those states where we think there are real strategic pilots to be involved with. And so for us right now, that's California and Florida. And I think we're seeing the same play out across the industry. You know, every big AV company is making their bet on one or two pilot sites, and that's where they're engaging with the states there. And then I think, you know, an interesting thing will be how will local cities respond. I think ultimately a lot of the control today has rested with the states and the federal governments, but cities want to be involved in some way. And so I think there will need to be some good collaboration between the cities and the companies on how this can look. And that might look like creating autonomous vehicle pickup and drop off pilots, where you're repurposing part of the curb away from parking to safe pickup and drop off experiences. But I think bottom line is we need more collaboration between companies and the governments who are overseeing and regulating this. And a key part of that is just mm-hmm. helping to provide knowledge and information about how this technology really works so everybody is on yep. the same page.
Makes sense, yeah. And on that note of, you know, regulatory issues at multiple levels, you know, those of us in technology know you're not going to get 100% safety all the time. And that's not really the point, right? The point is to make it much safer, orders of magnitude safer than human drivers. And there's some sort of acceptable issues with technology and collateral damage that we know we'll have to accept. And, you know, that's, I think, one of the prongs related to the regulatory issues is what is the right level of safety. And so how do you, you know, Voyage and some of the other companies you mentioned kind of reframe that debate away from this is totally safe versus it's not safe, you know, if it even has one accident, to compare it to the current baseline and say, here's how we're trying to make progress, you know, both for legal messaging and regulatory messaging, but then also just for the public consumption. I'm curious if that's something you guys think about and struggle
with. Yeah, no, I mean, I think you're totally right. You know, the reality is the baseline right now, human driving is not the safest. It's terrible. Yeah. I think there are almost 40,000 deaths a year just in the U.S. alone. And yep. if we think about our reaction to that, we don't really, I think, probably tackle that head on as much as we should. And that's a huge issue. And so I think self-driving has two huge opportunities. One is it can reduce the cost of mobility and thereby increase access to many more folks, which is really exciting. But I think the other is that it does hold out the potential to be a lot safer, to reduce distracted driving, to reduce drunk driving, tiredness, et cetera. Now, to get there, you know, we'll take some work, both as the technology continues to evolve, but also acceptance, as you mentioned. And the reality is, one of the upsides of self-driving is it will continue to get better as more and more of the algorithms are improved over time, and there is more miles driven, there are more edge cases discovered. And so it will continue to get better, unlike human drivers, which don't often do so. However, as you mentioned, it won't start by being perfect, and it may its goal is really to reduce fatalities and increase safety dramatically, but we shouldn't anchor on it reducing fatalities necessarily to zero. And to sort of hold up that bar as the sort of means by which we're comfortable deploying would set us back a fair amount. And actually, Rand came out with a study that showed that if you waited till it was 90% safer, for example, you would actually end up leading to many more fatalities than if you waited till it was just, say, 10 to 10% safer. So figuring out that right deployment is tricky. You know, I think what you want to do is make sure that the processes that are being put in place, both for simulation and testing the actual self-driving software, as well as the safety driver protocols, are rigorous, robust, and are solid. So you're making sure you're really mitigating any of the downside risk. But I think we don't want to make the perfect the enemy of the good. And even things that we now think about as pretty natural safety features, like airbags or seatbelts, in their early deployments had their own complexities. And so we want to keep our eyes on the prize. And one of the things that's tricky is humans have basically a higher standard for robots or algorithms than they do for themselves. And so I think part of that is around being really transparent about how all the systems work and doing a lot of consumer education. So people are a little bit less wary than they should be.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the latest trends in mobility, you know, you talk about your interest in urban mobility and how that developed. I'm sure you've been paying attention to kind of the scooter craze, you know, the Santa Monica-based companies and then some of the other bigger companies in San Francisco getting involved now. And it's interesting, you know, on the outside to watch Uber took one approach to regulation, right, early on in 2010, 2011, 2012, et cetera, and even beyond with respect to kind of getting consumers on their side in local markets and then using that as momentum to kind of push down regulations, you know, whether it's for taxi companies, medallions, et cetera. Scooter companies seem to be taking a slightly different approach. And I'm curious if you have thoughts on whether that's right, you know, should they be, or are they making a mistake and they should follow the Uber model?
Yeah, so the scooter market's super interesting. And I would say early on, if you talk to cities, they might feel that some of the companies who launched first actually were taking a page right out of the Uber playbook, launching without too much interaction. I think we're starting to see that change, and that's probably been both the scooter companies evolving behavior as well as cities reacting. And I think there are two big changes or differences from Uber and Lyft when they first launched. One is Uber and Lyft already launched and cities are a bit more aware of this dynamic and they don't want to be caught flat-footed again. I think a second big piece is, unlike Uber and Lyft, where the assets were maintained by private individuals who would then, you know, park them or get them off the public streets, as it were, scooters can remain on the streets and are much more easy to confiscate or fine. So it does require a sort of updated playbook. And so I think here is an example where figuring out the right balance of collaboration and interacting with the cities will be important, but still engaging consumers directly as well will be valuable. So I think it's sort of a, and you need a modified playbook where it's a little bit more collaborative spirit. And we see this play out, I think, in San Francisco right now as they're coming out with regulations for new permits. Seattle, I think, is in the middle of a similar process, which is you need to make sure that you're not totally alienating the people who will eventually be doing permitting. And so that's vital. On the other hand, for scooters to really work, you need a sufficient amount of density that they are sufficiently reliable. And so there is a concern that if you get caps that are artificially low, it will ultimately constrain what could be a really important urban mobility solution. So I think there's been a few different models discussed, and I don't think we've totally aligned on a perfect approach yet, but it will need to basically make sure that it is flexible enough and can be iterative enough to really capture the upside potential of these things. And so that will require basically foresight of both the companies, but also cities together.
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting market, and it'll be interesting to see how it plays out because it's still pretty nascent. When we think about the long history of technology and urban mobility, if you could have, let's say, your kind of ideal world with respect to urban mobility 5 years from now, paint a picture of what that would look like. And we may get there, we may not, but if we think about everything from what the tech looks like to what the policy looks like to what any government investments look like and, consumer usage and acceptance and city acceptance, what would that look like for you ideally?
Yeah, it's a great question and an exciting one that I like to think about a lot. I think, first of all, it starts with heavily investing in public transit and infrastructure that we already have. I think so often it's cities are struggling with underfunded transit systems, and those really need to form the backbone of moving lots of people at once. We're getting more and more people moving to cities, and in order to handle a lot of those in a lot of that growth, we really need to be able to solve the geometry problem by moving lots of people at scale and at mass. So I think that's key. And we need to really turn around a trend where we've been underinvesting, and that leads to performance issues, et cetera. So that sort of forms the backbone of it. But then I think in order to help move away from the personal car single occupancy usage trend that we've had for the last few decades, is we really need to have a different set or portfolio of mobility options that are also accessible, that either integrate with transit or serve as a complement to it for those sorts of rides that mass transit can't provide. And I think that starts to look like a mix of things that we've been discussing. So dockless e-bikes and scooters that can fulfill some of the shorter missions, under 2 miles, quick stops. And then we layer on autonomous vehicle shuttles. It can either be sort of shared rides like Uber Pool, Lyft Line, that sort of thing, or for trips that are quick or time sensitive, you can travel by yourself. And then I think we also need to use 3D space. And so things like air taxis, which may sound like science fiction to some, I think hold out real opportunities, particularly for longer distance commuting, say from San Francisco to San Jose, or in cities where there's just such dense congestion, like LA, where you want to fly from the west side of LA, LAX, Santa Monica, to downtown or East LA, and it can take up to an hour and a half in traffic. And ultimately, we need to piece all of these things together and make it really seamless so you can go from one thing to another. You can take a scooter to a vertiport and take an air taxi to downtown and then jump in an autonomous shuttle for the last mile. And I think figuring out how to integrate all that together will be crucial. So that mm-hmm. is both integrating the planning of the trips to the payment and making that all really seamless. So we continue to make the alternatives to the car easier. And then I think the final policy thing on that is we need to get smart about pricing signals. We often underprice the road and the curb. So parking is frankly mm-hmm. too cheap and we don't charge appropriately on the road. So we are not incentivizing the right behavior. So we probably need to do things like congestion pricing or increase parking pricing and then take that revenue and plow it into other parts of the transportation system.
Definitely. How do you get to work today in San Francisco?
This is a great example of both the upsides and the shortcomings of our land use and urban planning systems. So when I was at Uber, I would walk or take Muni, and it was great. At Voyage, I will be in Palo Alto. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, to get to Caltrain is a 30-minute walk, or sorry, a 30-minute trip, much longer walk. And so I will often have to drive. And that's a great example of if we could figure out sort of an air taxi model, that might be a great way for me to get around. Or if there was better connections to Caltrain or a different route, that would be sort of enable more mass transit. But we really need to integrate land use planning and transportation planning because that will dictate so much of our future urban growth.
All right. I want to see you in the first air taxi trip between San Francisco and Palo Alto.
Yeah, I'll be ready to sign up. Working on the policies as we speak. So count me in as a first adopter.
Yeah, you just gotta get around to SFO, and then it's smooth sailing. Well, cool. I appreciate you taking all the time to share some of your thoughts across all these different topics. But I want to give you a chance now as we start to wrap up. You know, a chance to talk about Voyage, what you guys are building and your vision. You talked a little bit about that when you talked about some of the challenges, but, you know, kind of give the 1,000-foot, 10,000-foot view maybe. And then I know you're hiring because Voyage is growing, like you mentioned, just raised Series A in that hypergrowth phase. So if you want to talk about some of the opportunities, you know, folks in the Bay Area might be interested in taking
a look at opportunities. Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, what Voyage is doing is it's trying to tackle first these closed communities rather than tackling big cities where we can really get to market sooner by simplifying the operational domain and really being able to just show that it is possible to pull a driver out safely and get around in these smaller communities. And we're starting with retirement communities because that's where we know there's a real demand. And we actually think there's a big market in and of itself there. The baby boomers and the older generations are growing at a super fast pace, and these communities are growing. And so I think it's a real exciting market. It's a real meaningful market, and it's a perfect example of what I would call tech for people. And so we're growing our team. And we're hiring a ton of engineers and machine learning, perception. So I would encourage anyone who is an engineer who is passionate about increasing mobility and making the world more accessible to folks to definitely get in touch with me. You can get me at justin@voyage.auto, A-U-T-O, or at Justin Ehrlich at my Twitter. But would love to hear from you and get you on board.
Awesome. Yeah, it sounds exciting. And I'll definitely have to drop by the Palo Alto office next time I'm in town. But I want to, thank you for taking the time this morning. And I'll let you go and figure out your commute today down to Palo Alto.
Commute is a great driver to remind me just how much I can't wait to get self-driving cars working. So I can increase my productivity dramatically while I'm commuting down there.
Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Justin. I appreciate it. And look forward to catching up again soon.
Absolutely. really enjoy a chat. Talk soon.